नान्यां गुणेभ्यः करतारं यदा दृष्टानुपश्यति गुणेभ्यश्चा परं देति मद्भावं सोऽति गच्छति. When you see that there is nothing beyond the modes of nature in all activities, and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to all these modes, then you can know my spiritual nature. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One can transcend all the activities of the modes of material nature simply by understanding them properly, by learning from the proper souls. The real spiritual master is Krishna, and he is imparting this spiritual knowledge to Arjuna. Similarly, it is from those who are fully in Krishna consciousness that one has to learn this science of activities in the terms of the modes of material nature. Otherwise, one's life will be misdirected. By the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, a living entity can know his spiritual position, his material body, his senses, how he is entrapped, and how he is under the spell of the material modes of nature. He is helpless, being in the grip of these modes. But when he can see his real position, then he can attain the transcendental position, having the scope for spiritual life. Actually, the living entity is not the performer of different activities. He is forced to act because he is situated in a particular type of body, conducted by some particular mode of material nature. Unless one has the help of spiritual authority, he cannot understand in what position he actually is situated. With the association of a bona fide spiritual master, he can see his real position. And by such an understanding, he can become fixed in full Krishna consciousness. A man in Krishna consciousness is not controlled by the spell of the material modes of nature. It has already been stated in the 7th chapter that one who has surrendered to Krishna is relieved from the activities of material nature. Therefore, for one who is able to see things as they are, the influence of material nature gradually ceases. Translation: when you see that there is nothing beyond these modes of nature in all activities, and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to all these modes, then you can know my spiritual nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna has said, Jnanam teham savijnanam idam bhakshyam yasheshita yajgyatva nehabunyonyaj gyatubhyam abhishishyate. That this knowledge is complete. Because when you have thus learned this science, you will know both nominal and phenomenal, the nature of the temporary as well as the nature of the eternal. You see, the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us how to live in this world but not of this world. But in order to do such, we must not only understand what is the nature of the soul and what is the nature of God, but we must also understand what is the nature of this world, this temporary world which is conducted by the three modes of material nature. It is described by Sri Krishna that this body is the field of activities, the Kshetra. And the soul is the Kshetragya. He is the knower of the field of activities. And he explains that one must simultaneously understand the nature of the field of activities as well as the nature of the soul, the nature of the performer of the activities. And the Ishopanishad further elaborates on this point by explaining that one must simultaneously cultivate knowledge and ignorance. What does that mean, to cultivate ignorance? It means to understand what ignorance is. It doesn't mean you should become ignorant. Many people have done like this. They say, well, the Ishopanishad says you should cultivate ignorance, so that means I should act very much having good time in the mode of ignorance, and in this way I will cultivate ignorance. Well, you should understand the nature of ignorance. What is ignorance? And how it is keeping you bound to the concept of misery, the bodily concept of life. This material world is one of the divine energies of the Lord. It is described in the Shastra that Sri Krishna expands himself as Srimati Radharani, who is the divine energy of the Lord. Now, in the spiritual world, Krishna also has a sister who is an expansion of Sri Radharani. Her name is Subhadra. You have seen that at Rath Yatra, there is one cart of Jagannath, who is Krishna, and his brother and sister also have their own chariots, which is Subhadra and Balaramji. So Subhadra, who is the personification of Yogamaya, she incarnates herself into this world as Durga. Durga is the keeper of the prison of material existence. In fact, the Sanskrit word Durga means prison. Now, is Durga material? Durga is not material. She is a spiritual energy of the Lord, but she is acting in such a way that she is revealing herself to those who are in ignorance. There is only one energy, but that energy manifests itself differently according to the receptacle. Just like from the powerhouse, electricity is coming. It's the same current of electricity. It is not two types of electricity. But in one receptacle, a stove, the electricity manifests itself as extreme heat for cooking. And in another receptacle, the refrigerator, that same electricity is manifesting itself as freezing cold. Now, is there a difference in the electricity? It's a difference in who is receiving the or what is receiving the electricity. It's not that electricity is hot or cold. Similarly, in the state, there is the police department, and there's also so many social welfare departments. Now, everyone likes the social welfare departments, correct? Because they do good for everyone, whoever you are. At least they're supposed to be doing good for everyone. But the police department, if you're a criminal, you hate the police department. But if you're a good citizen, you like the police department. Of course, in Kali Yuga, it's the opposite. If you're a good citizen, you're afraid of the police, and if you're a crook, you like the police, because usually they're working for you in Kali Yuga. But in a natural condition, the police, they are both agencies of the government. Therefore, the government sees that they're both good. The government sees that they're both good, but the criminal sees one is bad. Similarly, there is the prison house. The prison house is also run by the government. Now, for a criminal, the prison house is a very bad thing. But for the good citizen, the prison house is a very good thing. So similarly, this material energy is essentially spiritual. It is God's energy. And nothing about God is temporary. Nothing about God is material. Everything emanating from God is pure and spiritual. Om Purnam Ada Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vishishyate. That the Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, and everything emanating from Him is perfect and complete, including this temporary material energy. It is perfect and complete because it is coming from Krishna. Can anything imperfect come from the perfect? Not possible. It is illogical. But if our desire is not in harmony with the desire of God, then the beautiful form of Srimati Radharani, oftentimes she's offering flowers to Gopinath, and other times she's holding her hand out to bless her devotee. Lakshmi Devi is always holding her hand out to bless her devotee. But Durga Devi, she doesn't have her hand out like this. She has a trident. She usually has 10 hands with swords and clubs and all sorts of very violent-looking weapons. Huh? And there is the famous picture of Durga where there is a demon and the lion has a very firm grip on the demon and she's sticking the trident within his chest, right in his heart. The trident indicates the three modes of the threefold miseries of material existence. Adiatmika, Adibhautika, Adidaivika. Miseries caused by one's own body and mind. Miseries caused by other living beings. And miseries caused by natural disturbances. Now in this world we utilize our good human intelligence to try to somehow or other counteract the threefold miseries of material existence. Just like miseries caused by one's own body. Disease. People are getting diseased like anything. And therefore we have so many doctors and so many hospitals trying to somehow or other relieve the distress of disease. Huh? Sometimes doctors complicate the disease. Huh? Sometimes it's something so simple and it just becomes so complicated when you go to the doctor. Huh? In the Vedic system, in the old days, the doctors were Brahmins and they would never ask money. They would simply offer their services freely for the benefit of others. But today it's a very, very good profession. And people are not so concerned with people anymore, they're concerned with money. This is unfortunate. This is the disease, greed. The disease of greed is worse than the disease of disease. Why? Because it's the greed of disease, of it's the disease of greed that makes you commit sinful activities and the reaction is disease. That's why we say, physician, heal thyself. So of course, we have many, many hospitals and we have such a great, great scientific endeavor to cure the various diseases of the world. But we find that no matter how great medical technology becomes, there's still disease. Huh? Just like at one time there was in Europe, there was the bubonic fever. Is that what it is? Black plague. Practically half the population of Europe was killed. This was only a few hundred years ago. People think it can never happen to us. And then they found some cure. They're thinking, ah, very nice. And then there was tuberculosis. So many people were killed. And then they find a cure. And then cancer comes. And then they're starting to find some cures. But then AIDS comes. And now they don't know what to do. Huh? Someday they may find a cure. But some other disease will come. Throughout history, there's always a disease that cannot be cured. Huh? Has there ever been a time in modern history that there was not a disease that at that time was incurable? What do you say, doctor? Always like that. Why? Because if your karma is to die of a disease that's incurable, you can cure it, but Krishna will just send another one. So there's disease caused by the body. And even if, you be very healthy, still you must grow old and you must die. This is a miserable condition. So one point of Durga's trident is the misery caused by your own body and mind. Mental disease is even worse than physical disease. Generally, no matter how much physical distress a person's in, he somehow or other tolerates it. But when mental distress gets too much, they jump off buildings. Huh? How many people commit suicide due to physical distress? Very few, but very many due to mental distress. When the ghost of anxiety just starts usurping your mind, it's very frustrating, horrible, it's worse than physical disease. You can take some pain reliever, and you can somehow or other cope with physical disease. But due to mental disease, people are taking drugs and taking intoxication of alcohol, simply because they're mentally so frustrated and bored with life. They have to find some relief, some way to dull their minds. And the greatest problem in America now is not AIDS. The greatest problem in America is drugs, narcotics, destroying the whole country. The streets are practically battlefields, people being killed every day like anything in wars over who gets the land to sell the drugs. And young people are being given drugs that the first time you use it, practically you're addicted. And this is considered socially very, very distinguished to take drugs. In fact, if you don't take it, you're an outcast in many places. Even when I was a child, I remember drugs come in. You don't take this drug. What are you, from some other planet? This is what's happening. This is the in thing. And young people, they want to be in. They don't want to be out. People look at them like, we don't want to associate with you. You're out. Okay, I'll take it. I'm in. All right, you're in. Ha ha. This is what is happening. It's happening more and more in India. To the degree India becomes westernized, to the degree there will be drug addicts. And there will be AIDS and so many other nice adi atmaka diseases, sufferings, miseries caused by one's body and mind. And there's also misery caused by other living beings. Just like sometimes we become bitten by mosquitoes. It's very frustrating. Sometimes we get bitten by snakes. That's even more frustrating. Sometimes we get eaten by lions and tigers. That's even more frustrating. Sometimes we're insulted by human animals, which is very, very frustrating. Sometimes even our own loved ones, they turn against us and cause us great pain and anxiety. Sometimes there is terrorism and wars. This is pain, suffering caused by other living beings. And there is also adibhautika, miseries caused by natural disturbances. Too much heat, too much cold. Just like I remember a few years ago, we took about 50 devotees to the Himalayas for a pilgrimage. And we went in the month of May, and we were in Delhi, and it was very hot, so hot. It was miserably hot. Anyone who thought that they were this material body was suffering like anything. It was a very, very hot year that year. You remember? People were just let me sleep until the sun goes down, just to forget the pain. So everyone was thinking, we're going to the Himalayas. It will be nice and cool and refreshing. You remember this trip? So we went to the Himalayas, and it started becoming nice and cool and refreshing, and everyone was thinking, relief. We were thinking we're going on pilgrimage, but actually it's a nice vacation from the heat. And then we got to Badrinath, Badrik Ashram. And when we were there, we were all enjoying the nice, cool, refreshing atmosphere. And we said, let us chant and dance through the roads of Badrinath. So we started chanting, and the demigods must have been very pleased, because all of a sudden, big, big white flowers started falling from the, showering from the sky. But these flowers were very cold. In America, we call it snow. And it was so much snow that it was very deep, and it was very cold, and there was no sun to be seen anywhere. The sky became gray, almost black, and it was freezing. And of course, no one took any warm clothes, because we were all thinking it will be nice and refreshing. And it was so cold, we were thinking, let's go, enough of this pilgrimage, let's go. But the roads were blocked because too much snow, and the military was standing there with guns saying, no, you cannot go, you must stay. And we were all trembling, freezing, freezing, no blankets, nothing. And we were thinking how nice it was in Delhi, it was so nice and warm. The grass is always greener on the other side. Huh? Whatever misery we're in now, understand, tomorrow we're going to think how nice it was to be like this. So there was no escape. We were trapped. I won't mention names, but we had people who were very, very big controllers of companies, millionaires. They just tell their servants, do this, do this, do this. And they say, yes, 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 master. But now, even such people, they couldn't, with all the money in the whole world, they couldn't get one blanket. If they were to sell their whole industry, they could not get down that road. Everyone was equal. There was no question of whether you're educated or uneducated, whether you're a PhD or whether you're an illiterate, whether you're a Mataji or whether you're a sannyasi. You're cold. No. When the modes of material nature strike, they do not discriminate what your position is. Similarly, at the time of death, we should know that we're all stripped naked with nothing, and we're just standing before God. And all we have is our faith and our devotion. None of our material, acquisitions in this world will be of any avail. So who causes the heat and the cold? Sometimes there's drought. Sometimes there's too much rain and floods. If there's too much rain, everything is destroyed, right? Floods. If there's not enough rain, everything is destroyed. Drought. It is described that the demigods, the devatas, the higher powers, who are petitioned by Lord Sri Krishna to manage the affairs of the universe, they are the ones, these higher powers, who are creating the miseries and the pleasures of material life on the platform of Adi Bhautika, miseries caused by natural disturbances. So you see, for one who is in ignorance, that person is always being stabbed by the trident of Durga. But for one who is in knowledge, that person sees that actually this so-called pleasure and pain and honor and dishonor and happiness and distress, they are all the temporary manifestations of Maya. But Maya is Krishna's divine spiritual energy. The source of Maya is Yoga Maya, Lakshmi Devi, Sri Radharani. She is always standing before us offering her benediction. So therefore, when we know mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam, that Krishna, as he says in Gita, he is directing this material nature. He is the master and lord of this material nature. When we understand how he is transcendental and how we are part of him, and therefore we are also thoroughly transcendental, and how he creates this prison house of material nature, which causes simply a opportunity for rebellious living entities to realize the suffering condition of being apart from Krishna, then we no longer suffer the effects of material existence. We see the divine hand of God behind every situation of life. Krishna explains in the Gita how the modes of material nature are working, how they are affecting the body and how they are affecting the mind. Unless we understand exactly how these things are happening, we will be bewildered. Prakrite kriyamana nigunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma karataham iti manyate. This bewildered spirit soul thinks he's the doer of activities, but actually they are all being carried out by nature, by the three modes of nature. The mode of goodness, sattva-guna, the mode of passion, raja-guna, and the mode of ignorance, tamo-guna. When we understand how these three modes are working, then we can learn how to be Krishna-conscious. We can learn how to take shelter of Krishna. We can learn how to remember Krishna. We can learn how to be transcendental even in the face of the three modes of material nature. We will constantly be tested by Maya. Now, for a materialistic person who is in ignorance, those tests are simply nothing but punishment and pain. But for a devotee, when Maya tests, he sees that this is the most blessed opportunity for me to purify my consciousness. And the fact is, that is what Maya is for, to help you in your Krishna consciousness. Huh? That is why Queen Kunti, she prayed in such a way. Very few people dare to pray in the same way as Kunti. Vipada santu tashashva tatra tatra jagat guru. Bhavatot, she says that Krishna, let the miseries, the sufferings, the calamities come to me again and again and again. Because in the face of these conditions of life, I remember you. And in remembering you, I never have to see birth and death. It is said that death personified and fear personified are afraid of Krishna. When we remember Krishna, there is no more death. There is no more misery. Any more than in the presence of the sun, there can be darkness. So some of us think that I chant, I remember Krishna, but still I'm suffering too much. Why? Because we have to learn how to remember Krishna in the same feeling as Queen Kunti. We have to surrender our minds, surrender our consciousness to the feet of Krishna to really remember him. We have to learn to take shelter of him. And generally, when everything is very nice, our religion, our spiritual life is just a formality or a hobby. Huh? You use that word in India? Hobby. I mean, it's just part, something we do. It's a nice part of our life. It gives peace to our mind. That's all right. To have peace in the mind is all right. But a little peace of mind is not going to help you from the tragedies of life. When the real tragedies of life come, there's only one salvation, and that is totally taking utter shelter at the feet of God. Huh? People are very fond of being religious. I will perform my pious activities. Just like yesterday, someone was telling me that he knows one man. He's a very religious man. He goes to holy places, but he takes a little alcohol whenever it is required. So this man is very religious. He's very pious. He's a good man. But still, he takes alcohol. So you're saying, what's wrong with that? I was explaining that he may be a little religious, but Krishna in Gita, he says, sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. If you are religious, that is very good. You will gradually make advancement. But ultimately, you have to come to the point of surrender if you want to become freed from the repetition of birth and death. Being religious will not bring you to that point of no more death, no more suffering. Only surrender. Surrender to the supreme will of God. Now the question is, does God want you to drink alcohol? If he does not, then you may be religious, but there is a defect, there is a flaw in your religion. But if you actually want to become freed from the sufferings of material existence, you have to surrender. And surrender means to do the will of God. This person said, but this man loves God. I said, love? What a kind of love? If your beloved tells you he doesn't like something, then you'll die before doing that, because you know it will displease him, it will hurt him. Krishna feels pain when we engage in sinful activities, because he loves us. Just like a father, when he sees a child behaving in such a way that the child is going to suffer, it pains the father out of love. So if you love Krishna, you will not want to give him any pain. If you love your guru, you will not want to give him any pain. And every time we deviate, we cause pain. Whether you're a devotee or not a devotee, you are still Krishna's son and you are still causing him pain. Huh? So religion culminates in surrender. And Queen Kunti is talking about this sweet feeling of surrender. That when everything is nice, Krishna, now everything's too nice. Now I'm the queen of Dwarka. Not Dwarka, Hastinapur. Now I'm the queen of Hastinapur. Now we have conquered the whole world. Now we're in a very pleasant condition. But we were safer when we were living in the jungles with nothing, because we had no other shelter except you. Now we have so many shelters. Now it's easy to forget you. There is a story in the Shastra. It describes how Duravas Muni, he was a very great yogi. He was a partial expansion of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is Ashutosh, which means he is very easily pleased and he is very easily angry. Huh? He gives very quick benedictions, but he also gives very quick, with his anger, curses, sometimes like that, yes. Just like it is described that one time Lord Shiva came to Vrindavan. And you know the gopis, they're very simple, cowherd girls. And when Lord Shiva came to Vrindavan, you know, he had serpents around his neck and crematorium ashes, so they became very frightened. It wasn't Shiva, I'm sorry, it was Durvas Muni. Durvas Muni was an expansion of Lord Shiva. When he came to Vrindavan, he looked like a very severe tapasi, matted hair, and he was very much like a yogi from Himalayas. So the gopis became afraid of him, so they ran away. But Srimati Radharani, she was very much, thinking he's a guest, we must treat him nicely. So with very sweet words, she greeted him, and she gave him nice prasad, and she just was so nice to him. Durvas Muni was pleased, so he gave her benediction. He said, whatever you cook will be sweeter than nectar, and anyone who eats your cooking will never fall sick. So when Mother Yashoda found out about this benediction given to Sri Radharani, she asked her to cook for Krishna every day so he would never become sick. So in this way, Durvas Muni sometimes gives nice benedictions. But you know, in the story of Ambarish Maharaj, when Durvas Muni was angry, he created a fiery demon to kill him. But Ambarish was saved by the will of God. So one day Durvas Muni came to the house of Duryodhana. And Duryodhana pleased Durvas Muni very nicely. See, Duryodhana was very clever. He was very clever. He knew if I really, really go out of my way to please Durvas Muni, he will give me a benediction. And just see what I do with this benediction. So he satisfied Durvas Muni, and Durvas Muni said, Duryodhana, you have made me very happy. You have gone out of your way with your hospitality. Now what benediction can I give you? And Duryodhana said, my cousins, the Pandavas, I think you should go to their house for prasad. That's the benediction I want. Go to their house for prasad. And take all your followers with you. Durvas Muni had 10,000 disciples, and he would always travel with many, many, many disciples. Now Duryodhana told Durvas, but you should go there exactly at this time of the day, late in the afternoon. So he went with his thousands of disciples, and they arrived. And Draupadi was there with the Pandavas. At that time they were living in exile. They were in the forest, in the little cottage. Duryodhana was not satisfied that they were banished from the kingdom and living in the jungle. He wanted to see them get cursed. He knew that if they couldn't feed Durvas and all his disciples nicely, Durvas would curse them, because he would be very angry. So Durvas Muni arrived, and Yudhisthira Maharaj greeted him, and Durvas Muni said, we are very hungry, we have come for lunch. Yudhisthira Maharaj was thinking, oh my God, we have nothing, we're living in the jungles. It's not that we have any servants or grocery stores, what do we have? He said, why don't you go take your bath in the river and we will prepare. Durvas Muni said, all right, but I will be back, and we are very hungry. So they went to the river to take their bath. At that time, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to Draupadi and said, we have to prepare something for thousands and thousands of people. Nice, otherwise we'll be cursed for sure. Now Draupadi had a special plate, and this plate was given to her by Surya, the sun god. And it is said that that plate would give as much food was required. If 1,000,000 people came for prasad to her house, that plate would produce instantly enough for 1,000,000 people. But there was one limitation, that it only had this power until she ate. After she completed her prasad, that it became an ordinary plate till the next day. So she had just completed her prasad. Because Duryodhana knew exactly what time she would eat, and he sent them just at that time. So she was in great distress. Now my plate is ordinary. We do not have any food, nothing in our house, not even a grain. What to do? We're going to get cursed. We're going to displease this yogi. So Draupadi began to cry. And of course, in this condition, she was crying out to Krishna. Krishna, save me. We have no one to turn to now. We're powerless. Save us, Krishna, save us. Krishna's in everyone's heart. He hears your every prayer. He hears your every word, whether you like it or not. You can be assured 100% that whenever you pray to Krishna, he hears that prayer. And he will respond according to what's best for you. But you can also be assured, when you talk all nonsense, he hears that as well. Huh? So Krishna heard the heartfelt prayer of Draupadi. And he just happened to walk by. He was in the middle of the forest, in the jungles, in the wilderness. But Krishna just happened to be walking by that day. Huh? And he came to the house of Draupadi, and he said, "Ah, Draupadi, I'm very hungry." And she just put her head down, and she started to cry, because after all, she was a very soft-hearted lady. She started to cry, "Krishna, what to do? I don't... Getting cursed by Durvas Muni, that's very bad. But to not even have anything for you, the Supreme Lord of our life, when you come to our house, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. Getting cursed we're afraid of, but displeasing you, that is worse than death." And she was just crying, 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 "Krishna, please forgive me, please help me." And Krishna, seeing how she was so sincerely taking shelter of him, he said, "Just give me something, anything." She said, "There's nothing." He said, "Go down and look in the pots and just bring the pot that you cooked today." So she brought the pot, and there was just a tiny little shred of a vegetable stuck to the bottom of the pot. And Krishna took it and ate it. And he said, "Ah, thank you very much. I am very satisfied. Now, when you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is satisfied." Huh? Krishna is the root. He is the source of everything. When Krishna is satisfied, your life is perfect. If you satisfy everyone else but Krishna is not satisfied, your life is a useless waste. So Durvas Muni and all of his disciples, sitting in the river, taking their bath, all of a sudden, they became very filled up, just as if they had eaten a huge feast. They were like, you know how you are when you're very full. They were like that. And then Draupadi, knowing what Krishna had done, she told Bhima, "Bhima, you go call them all to have prasad." So Bhima went to the river, and with his very loud, courageous voice, he said, "Durvas Muni, Maharaj, and all your disciples, please come, we have prepared a nice feast for you." And they all looked at each other like, "My God, you know what, Maharaj Yudhisthira, when he prepares a feast, it's such an opulent, luxurious feast, and if we do not eat it, it will be such an offense, and we cannot even take one spoon." So they all just waited for Bhima to turn his back, and they all ran away. Very secretly just ran into the jungles and disappeared. And this is why Krishna saved them. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness. That whether you like it or don't like it, the nature of this material world, due to its temporary conditioning, is there's going to be reversals and sufferings and tests in our life. And those tests, which are brought about by the power of Krishna through Maya, we should know that these tests are the greatest opportunity for me to take shelter of the Supreme Lord, to remember the words of Mother Kunti. But if we do not understand the principles of how this material nature is working and why it is working the way it is, if we do not understand this, we will simply become bewildered, endlessly bewildered by the endlessly transmutable changes of this world. Why is this happening to me? How many of us ask this question? Raise your hand if you never ask this question. Raise your hand if you sometimes ask this question. Why is this happening to me? What have I done? I'm such a nice person. Huh? I may have made some mistakes, but I don't deserve this. Huh? We all ask this question. It's the universal question. Whether you're black or white or Indian or Asian or American or African, whether you're a Hindu or a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew, whether young or old, everyone asks this question. Why is this happening to me? Huh? A devotee does not ask this question. A devotee says, Krishna, you are very kind. So you see, the scientists, they are trying to figure out how this world is working. Correct? But no matter how many experiments they perform, and no matter how many theories they present to the world, they still cannot figure out how this world is working. They may not figure out how one little aspect is working. But a devotee, not only does he understand how this world is working, but he understands a question which is millions and millions and millions of times more important. Why this world is working the way it is? Do the material scientists ever ask that question? They ask how, but they never ask why. But Bhagavad Gita teaches us not only how, but why. And when we understand this one verse, Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunani nukonteya jagati paribharata. That Krishna is directing everything that is existing within this material world. It is all happening by His will. Not a blade of grass can move without His sanction. Today's verse, when you see that there is nothing beyond these modes of nature in all activities, and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to all those modes, then you can know my spiritual nature. So let us become like Draupadi and her mother-in-law Kunti in this way. In the face of great reversals, they will come into your life, no matter who you are. In the face of great testing, we should simply take the opportunity to understand that the nature of this material existence, it is like an ocean, I cannot cross it. But if I simply take shelter of Krishna, then this ocean becomes reduced to the size of the hoofprint of a calf. The water contained therein. Huh? This is a verse from the Bhagavatam. Every opportunity in our life to take shelter of Krishna, we should be thankful, we should be grateful. We should not complain. We should not try to put the blame on others. How many are like this? When things go completely against our will, we like to blame others. It's all his fault. If only he did like this, then it would be. How many do like this? Raise your hand. How many never blame anybody else? We always like to blame others. We always like to think how this is unfair. We always like to criticize. We always like to find fault. What we're doing is we're escaping the opportunity to surrender to Krishna. We're escaping the opportunity to take shelter of the Lord. Therefore, we should have this faith that Krishna is non-different than His name. And if we simply learn to take shelter of Krishna's name in all circumstances of life, good or bad, pleasurable or painful, we never have to see the trident of Durga. We will always see the blessed form of God. We will always see the sweet and beautiful face of Krishna in the background behind everything that's happening in our life. Huh? If we simply learn how to take shelter of His name. We will never be bewildered. we will never be confused. We will never be in this nonsense mentality, why is this happening to me? But rather we will always be, Krishna, thank you, you are very kind. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Our spiritual master used to tell us that if you simply have complete faith that Krishna is non-different than his name, then you are liberated from all the miseries of material life. So therefore it is very important to come to the temples, to come before the beautiful form of the Lord, to associate with the Lord's devotees, to hear the philosophy of life being presented according to the authorized disciplic lines coming from Krishna. By hearing the glories of the holy name, by understanding how this nature is working and why. This whole material world in Kali Yuga is created just to get you to take shelter of Krishna's name. If you see it as that, then you welcome everything and you're happy, you're peaceful, even in the face of the most unbearable conditions of life. But if you forget that, then you're simply a victim of Kali Yuga. You will be bewildered, perplexed, disheartened. So let us learn how to take shelter of Krishna's name. Let us see his loving hand in our life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. There's a famous song in America. This was back in the 60s. It wasn't... A devotee can take gold even from a filthy place. This name of the song was, "You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find you'll get what you need." Now, of course, he was talking about something completely different. But a devotee can take gold even from a filthy place. But this is our philosophy. You cannot always get what you want, but you should know that you're always getting what you need. So why should we be dissatisfied? Krishna's all-knowing and all-loving, and he's our friend. Surada Sarva Bhutanam, he's the best friend of everyone. Just have faith that Krishna is our friend, that he is the master and controller, and that he is none different than his holy name to turn to in all circumstances of life. And then we can learn what it really means to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
As you have said that Bhagavati has told that we must get a suffering as well, and it is more and more suffering so that we can be more and more Krishna conscious. But it has been observed by neophyte devotees that whatever the difficulties they are getting, when the difficulties also just need to absorb that point, they are finding it, so to say, hatred against Krishna. Because we, at that level of time, he is not reached to that level. Whatever it is coming, it is coming from Krishna.
He must associate with people on that level. And then he will be given proper intelligence. It is very simple. That is why the association of devotees is very important in our life. They will remind us, they will guide us, but we have to open our hearts to hear.